Hi, everyone, and welcome to Televisions, the podcast, an audio companion to the Televisions website and a show made by Anglophiles for Anglophiles. I am Lacey Barger-Milas, and I'm the editor here at Televisions. And joining me, as per usual, is my co-host, Miss Annie Bundle.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you today?
Well, this is already my second take on doing the intro to the show that I do every week, so I'm doing great.
Well, listen, I overslept and, like, we're recording, like, way late today, so, yeah,
you sure are.
It's just that kind of day, okay? It's just that kind of day. We all just forgive ourselves and move on. So what are we talking about today?
We are entering into the spring gauntlet of PBS programming, and, I'm actually not sure why we decided to go first with this one, probably because it's the shortest. Mm-hmm. Today, we are going to talk about Nolly, the masterpiece drama starring Helena Bonham Carter, and our recapper, Sophie Brookover, is here to help us discuss this show, which is something I put in my eyeballs. Hi, Sophie.
Hello. Hi, Lacey and Annie. Thanks for having me back.
Hello. I know this is one of those. Yes, we basically have this season on this spring season on Masterpiece. We basically, instead of having one long 8-episode something or other, or 2 6-episode back to backers, or, you know, a 6 and a 4, what we have is we have instead, they're actually doing both a 9 p.m. and a 10 p.m. show, which is nice in that we get, like, double the amount of shows. But the 9 p.m.s are all, like, little shorties. We get a 3-episode of Nolly, and then a 4-episode of Mr. Bates, and then a 4-episode a 3-episode of Maryland. So, you know, basically, we're going to be popping up every couple of weeks with another Masterpiece show is what's basically what I'm saying.
Yeah. I feel like I should apologize in advance for there really wasn't, like, an easy way to cover these things.
Mm-hmm.
For this instance, I only watched. I'm sure they probably watched more, but you will hear why I only watched what I needed to watch in a minute. We only watched one episode of this 3-episode show for this conversation, and I don't know how useful that's really going to be for a lot of people in terms of, like, how good is the show, because we're only talking about the very beginning of it. But it's hard to figure out how to schedule when we should talk about these things, because I don't think anybody really wants us to give 2 episodes of the show to
right.
a 3-episode series. But I don't know. It's messy. I apologize in advance.
Yeah.
Welcome to this free content for you. This is what it is.
Right. Well, also you're approaching something that is out of your control. Do you know what
yeah.
I mean? Like all you two can do is respond to the circumstances that you're presented with. So
yeah, it's not like with Mr. Bates, it's easier to sort of guess that, like, doing the first episode is good. Doing the first episode is enough, because the actual debut of it is such a big deal, since it was so,
right.
such a big deal in the UK, you know.
Yeah.
And, like, for Maryland, the same thing. We're going to do the first episode and we're going to sort of hope. But with this, it was sort of like, let's do the first episode and sort of hope. And, you know, I know that you watched 1 episode. I actually watched the first 2. I don't know how many Sophie's watched.
All 3, baby.
I knew you would have. I knew it.
Yeah. I'm a completist. It's important to me.
This very much feels like a show that I might not finish.
Yeah.
We'll see.
The reason that I watched the second one was partly because I wanted to sort of see how much of Nolly's history this show yeah. was gonna really touch on, and that's partly because I had planned and I have written a post basically, like, sort of explaining who Noel Gordon was, and so I wanted to know how much the show was going to tell us. And after the second episode, I sort of knew how much the show was going to tell us, and I sort of stopped.
I just have a lot of questions from a 50,000 foot perspective of why did they make I just don't understand the choice to make this a 3-episode drama. Like, couldn't this just have been like a TV movie? I don't feel like this necessitates 3 hours of your life.
Well, okay. Let's back up and let Sophie explain the plot.
Sure. So very broadly, and I am going to say a couple of things about the 2nd and 3rd episodes, just because they do tend to creep in there. And also, it's about, like, stuff that happened.
It's history. It's history. It's not a spoiler.
Exactly. Exactly. Thank you. That was very succinct and correct. So this is a, as Lacey pointed out, a three-part biographical miniseries about Noel Gordon, who was like really an institution of mid-20th century British television. She was a real pioneer in terms of being a woman like front and center on TV. And Annie, jump in if I'm getting some of these things wrong. And so yeah, and like started as the show, the very first episode shows us a very, very young and beautiful Noel Gordon sitting for a screen test where she learns and we learn that she's going to be the very first woman ever broadcast on the BBC in full color. And that's in 1938. And then we jump ahead to 1975 when she was, you know, already, I think by that point, very much like a grande dame of British TV. And then we jump ahead again to 1981, which is where like the real meat of the series lives. And it's basically all about how, you know, a person who was absolutely just, when you think of people who are institutions, I think she's a terrific example of that. And it's, she's just one that a lot of American viewers, particularly younger American viewers, will have absolutely no context for. But you, I think they give you a lot of that visually in terms of how she dresses, her obvious appreciation for the finer things in life. Like she's driven in a beautiful Rolls Royce. And at first you think the driver is just her driver, but he's actually her work bestie and a fellow actor on this soap opera that they're on called Crossroads, which ran for a very, very long time. And eventually ATV, which was going to be subsumed into what is now ITV. To me, it was a story that was a lot like what I imagine happened behind the scenes at networks like HBO, Max, whatever the heck you want to call it these days, where like, you know, a new set of executives came in, looked at their books and decided, okay, like people who were here before us made agreements to do certain things. And those are things that we actually can't afford to do anymore. Now, could they have afforded to do them? Probably. They could have made other decisions. But so the network wanted to get rid of this show and do other things. And the reason that they had to fire Nolly first is that she was the only member of the cast who had like a contract. Everybody else was like, they were freelancers, basically. Would you say that that's correct?
Yes, I would say that's correct.
Yeah. Yeah. So they had to, you know, remove her from the board in order to continue, you know, making their various little chess moves there. So she wakes up one morning in the full expectation that her agent will be calling her that evening to let her know about how the contract negotiations went between him and the network executive in London. And instead, he calls her to say, I'm so sorry, but you're done. Like, there will be no new contract. And also, your character, the main character of the show, Meg Mortimer, is going to die. Like, they're not just, you know, sending you off on a long, long vacation. Meg will simply cease to exist. And from there, it's sort of like how she processes this knowledge, how she shares it with her coworkers, how she shares it with the world, the difference between what she planned to do and what she actually winds up doing in the moment. And sort of like what happens. I feel like it goes on a little long with this big question mark as to why she got the sack. But I mean, the answer was something that I thought was, it was what I thought had happened. And when it was confirmed, I thought, okay, yeah, great. Okay, good. Like that's the things that happened are the things that happened.
Yeah. The fact that they try to make it a mystery is not actually effective, I think.
Yeah, no, not at all. It's not a success.
And I don't know if that's because I'm in this industry and I know how this works. And this is one of those things where, like, I actually kind of need, like, And I apologize for putting it this way because I don't have a better way of putting it. I kind of need a normie to watch this and tell me if it's a mystery to them, because the truth is that, like, I know how the television business works. Okay. So the moment I understood that, you know, ATV is being subsumed by something called CIT, which is or CIV, which is a central independent television, and is basically, which is the next step of which became ITV. I understood what was going to happen, which is that they are firing her so that basically they can shut down the show so they can get rid of Crossroads, right? But the show tries to make that a mystery. And, like, to me, that's no mystery. Of course, that's how the television industry works. But if somebody who doesn't actually work in the television industry watches this, maybe it is a mystery to them because they don't know how that works. I don't know. Because also this is the 21st century and we all sort of know how it works, right?
Right, right. But I don't know. I don't know that that's a question that we can answer mm-hmm. in this conversation. But I do think things that we can talk about are more like, you know, what is within the, you know, the bounds of this episode and the series as a whole, what is the significance of Nolly as a person and as an institution and an extremely influential person in the history of British TV? Like, I think those are things we can definitely talk about. And if you want, I have plenty of stuff to talk about vis-a-vis like the aesthetics, which I think are very interesting.
I would say that question you just asked is kind of like the existential question of the show for me, because I don't feel, as somebody who knew nothing about Noel Gordon before watching this, I have no idea why I should care. And in fact, do not really care. Like, I literally, the whole first episode just takes the entire time for her to get fired. And it's, I don't know why that, like, I was just like, this is happening. Like, the show doesn't do a lot. And part of that, I know, is that it's a show that's made for a British audience, not an American one. And their context of it is obviously different from mine. Yeah. But, like, this show, maybe I just don't know this because I'm not British. And the identity of this woman and her impact are just sort of, like, passed to you at birth in the British Isles or something. But the show does a very poor job for me of justifying its own existence.
I agree, Lacey. Like, we are not actually the audience for this show. I think that we are seeing it because Helena Bonham Carter is such an icon. And I think that it is the kind of thing that a lot of Masterpiece viewers would be attracted to just on the basis of that. If you go back and rewatch the trailer, it makes the show seem like things are going to be more fabulous than they actually are. It actually is an incredibly sad story about an older female artist being shunted off to the side. Like, and then having a really difficult time, first of all, just like navigating the, again, like existential crisis of, well, if I don't do this, this thing to which I have devoted 18 years of my life to, what am I even doing? And, like, all of her younger colleagues think, like, well, obviously, like, you're going to go back to the stage. Like, you're amazing. You're Nolly. You're you. You are she. She is her. But it's really, really tricky. And the second, I felt that it improves over the course of the three episodes, which does not answer the problem of, like, why is the first episode a little clunky and clumsy?
And maybe you guys, since you've seen more than I have, can speak to this. Like, I think a lot of people are going to watch this first episode and do exactly what I will probably do, which is not watch any more of it, because it doesn't make me want to watch more. Do you know what I mean? Like, it does a really poor job of selling itself. So, I mean, there's like two more hours of this, y'all. My time is valuable. Like, this does not give me like a really good reason to keep watching it. And I think, I don't think I'm going to be the only person that feels that way. Let me put it that way.
Okay. So I, when I was talking about this in my article about like Nolly's career, I compared this to being like a three part show on like, and I chose somebody, from the 1970s that most people wouldn't have heard of today. I chose Erin Moran, who was a huge star on Happy Days. She was so big, she got her own spinoff, Joni Loves Chachi.
Which is not great. The spinoff is not great. Just put that out there.
No, it's not. But she and the guy who played Chachi, they were so huge on Happy Days, they got their own spinoff. Joni Loves Chachi was a terrible show. And literally, their careers collapsed after that. Like, they had no career after that, right? And this is like if somebody did a three-part series on Erin Moran's career collapsing and cratering after Joni Loves Chachi and aired it on ITV with no explanation.
Well, yeah, it's so weird to me because, like, the first episode has such, like, bizarre kind of Helena Bonham Carter's, like, really giving Gloria Swanson, like, Sunset Boulevard vibes. And, like, that is not the show. I was told this was. And it doesn't sound like that's what the rest of the show is. But, like, the whole first episode sort of makes her seem like, I don't know, like, kind of an out of touch. And I don't know why I'm supposed to be sympathetic towards her. Do you know what I mean? Like, we get to the firing at the very end of it, but that's like an hour into the story. And I've already decided I don't like her.
Right. Although I will point out the firing happened much closer to the first half of the episode. It's not at the very end.
It feels like it's at the very end.
Okay. It's not that it's that she accept. She doesn't really like it. She doesn't process it till the very end. I think is a better way of putting it. She gets fired about halfway through the first episode, but her brain doesn't actually like accept that she's been fired until the end of the episode. So I will accept that it doesn't feel like she does. She doesn't process that she has actually been fired and there is nothing she can do about it. She can't change this situation until the end of the episode.
Yeah, which actually, that is a good way to frame it. And it makes a lot of sense because when we are introduced to Nolly in 1975, it's through the lens of her director and producer coming up to her in the church where they're about to shoot her wedding scene. And he presents her with this massive problem, which is that like thousands of people, fans of the show, are outside the church and they're in the shot. And she resolves this problem quickly, elegantly, maybe with less grace than one would prefer. Like, she's a little bit mean to her producer, director, Con O'Neill. But
Con O'Neill is great in this, by the way.
He is great. I mean, like, I would be very hard pressed to cite a performance in which he is not great. But like, yes, I think he is particularly great at like, I love that they chose someone who I consider to be like, oh, I'm so happy to see him on screen.
Yes.
And then have him be really like a slimy jerk. Mm-hmm. I was not expecting that.
He is so great in this.
He is really good.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. So she's like, I think a huge part of who Nolly is like, she's a problem solver. She's going to like forge onward no matter what. You know, they don't show us anything about the war, but one imagines that, like, she took that with, you know, sort of this blithe, like, well, of course we're going to come out on top. Like, what can you possibly mean we might not? So she's a big problem solver, and she does it again and again and again and again. When we get, I really enjoyed, actually, the scenes at ATV headquarters where people are rehearsing, and we get all the, like, okay, well, the episode, the scripts. How many? It was three episodes a week, four episodes a week, something like that, which is a completely wild production schedule. In fact, I made a note of like when they are rehearsing an episode, and we get this sort of through the eyes of a young woman named Poppy, who is playing a new character on the show named Honor, who's going to be an adopted family member of the family. The producer says, okay, we're now rehearsing episode 3499.
Yep.
3,500 episodes.
Uh-huh. Since 1964.
Incredible.
Right? Incredible. In 15 years. Yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. Like, that is an insane production schedule. What I want to talk about, though, and this is especially, this is the part of the reason why, like, I stopped watching after episode two, is that this is a show called Nolly. And I expected this show to teach me about Nolly.
Mm.
And one of the things about this show that it doesn't do is actually teach me about Nolly.
which is really disappointing. I thought, see, to Sophie's earlier point, I thought it was going to be like a Russell joint where it was really about like how fabulous she was, like that it was very like, you know, fun and quippy and quick and interesting. And it was just, it was not that.
Okay, this show is by Russell T. Davies. And the reason that I knew that Russell T. Davies wanted to do this show is because Noel Gordon was a major gay icon of the 1960s and 70s.
Wow, the show does not give you that at all.
No, it does not.
I'm sorry, Russell. I love you, but this is a mess.
When I started going through reading about Noel Gordon, I was stunned at how amazing this woman actually was, okay? Yes, she was, as Sophie mentioned, you know, she started her career, she started her career as a teenager. Her mom and her aunt basically saw that she had talent and basically became stage mothers and, like, shoved her off onto the stage. But her big moment of, like, realizing that she wanted to do this for herself was that moment when she basically, John Logie Baird is the guy. We actually had there's a Doctor Who episode that happened this past Christmas about the fact that he did these color tests of sending through the of for the BBC in 1938, the first color television tests. She was the first woman. She was the woman he hired. So she was actually the first woman who was sent in color. That was for her the moment when she realized that this is what she wanted to do. This was the future. Now, the problem was the TV was still like, you know, it wasn't a thing. There wasn't enough of it for her to make a career out of. So she like went and she did things on stage. She was actually in the first cast of Brigadoon. So that sort of like puts you in where she was like in terms of like career wise, in terms of like timeline. But she actually quit theater. She went across the sea. She went to NYU in her 20s and she actually like left her career completely and went back to school and got a degree from NYU in TV production and then came back to London. And she was the only woman on the team to help launch ATV. She literally helped launch what is now ITV, which was at the time the only thing competing with the BBC. Okay. She was the first woman to interview a prime minister, and not because like she fought for it or anything. She just happened to be the default because there was no one else there who was like on the air at the moment when he showed up. She just happened to be helming the chat show Tea with Nolly Garden, and he showed up. And so that's what happened. She just interviewed him, right? Like, that's incredible to me. Right. She basically invented the sort of morning show that we think of nowadays that you see on the Today Show. She basically invented that from whole cloth because she didn't there was nothing. And so she just had to come up with something. Right. It was called like that's amazing to me. Why is that not in the show?
Yeah, those are extraordinary accomplishments. And I think it's one of those things where you see how much influence one particular person with one very particular personality can have, and how easy it is for all of that to be forgotten much sooner than it ought to be. I think that, yes, this was something that like went around and around and around in my mind as I was watching Manhunt. And the thing that really struck me about that is that one of the big points of that series is that history is not inevitable. History happens because human beings make choices and do things. And sure, there's serendipity, like the serendipity of the prime minister appearing, you know, when she was there. Great. That's right time, right place. You know, no one could have planned for that, but people make decisions, and that's why history unfolds the way that it does. I have to hypothesize that part of why Davis chose to make this show about like this sadder, later era of her life is, I feel like maybe there's an attachment to melancholy there. Like 1981 is, you know, when I think the AIDS crisis first began to be talked about. Like, you know, our president would certainly not say that word on, you know, live in front of reporters or on TV.
No, 81 was when, but, the AIDS crisis first began. Right. Yes. And that's
so it was very much, that was very much happening. That was very much in the, you know, in the background. And I feel like so many of the gay men for whom she would have been such an important touchstone and icon died. So I wonder if there's an aspect of this is that is involved in sort of like re-excavating and re-presenting and reintroducing, not just like a, I feel like the show, not necessarily successfully, but my thought is that it's attempting to recover some of that for an audience who either remembers it and wants to see a slightly different look at it, or an audience, like a young queer audience in particular, who are hungry for stories about their, you know, late elders.
Yeah, I actually do think that this is very much for a young queer audience. I do very much believe that. When you said that this is not a show for us, that I agree with. And I do think it is for a young queer audience. And I think it's for a young queer audience that is British. That knows about Crossroads, that knows about Nolly, that knows that this is something that their elders loved and is looking for that history. I do actually believe that you are correct there. But I think that it is a problem that this is being presented to us without explanation, because that explanation is very necessary. If you come into this without any kind of knowledge, as Lacey has pointed out, and know nothing about Crossroads, know nothing about Nolly as an institution, if you don't know that literally the reason that she stars in Crossroads is because Crossroads, basically her lunchbox show, which is basically what invented like morning television, was canceled when they decided that wasn't giving enough ratings, and they wanted to do a soap opera in that spot instead. Because all they had was her, they built the show around her, and they invented this character for her. So that's why she starred in it, because she happened to be there. So they just wrote this character for her, right? Mm-hmm. If you don't know all of that going in, none of this makes any sense, right? Once you know that, once you have that context, then, like, suddenly her glorious wanton behavior makes sense. If you know she's the only one there with an actual contract, and that every single one of the other people there are day players, then this makes sense. If you know that she literally never stood up for any single one of them and let them all get fired and didn't, like, raise a finger when they were, like, tossed out on their ears, then suddenly this all makes sense, right? Like, and that's the thing, is that you don't know any of it. All you see is her swanning around, having her work bestie drive her places. Like, you don't get any of that. You just get that she is, as Lacey put it, the B word. And you don't get, you don't understand why someone like Davies would be emotionally attached to this incredibly powerful woman who has broken down all these glass ceilings simply by going boom. You know, like that's why the show is not working in that first episode. And I don't think it works in the second episode either. And I don't think it's going to work. Like, I believe you that it does get better by the third episode, because the second episode is definitely better than the first. And I'm not surprised that the third episode is better than the second.
I mean, it's going to take, it's going to be the hardcore people that get to the third episode.
Yes. And I don't, but I still don't think, even with that, unless you have this context, I don't think those three episodes are going to work for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And I think that's a problem. I think that Masterpiece has not marketed this correctly, is my real end take of this show.
So let me ask you a question. If we accept the premise that this is really a series for like young queer audiences, and when I think about like young queer people in Great Britain, what I think of is like people whose grandparents would have, or aunties would have watched this show,
telling them,
right. And maybe they see an ad for it and say, oh my gosh, like this woman was so amazing. You're like, I feel like there are real and significant opportunities for intergenerational bonding and understanding and learning to happen around this show, which I think is very cool. But it's so, there's such a difference. It's such a distinction. And Nolly does not fare well in this comparison. But like when I think about All Creatures Great and Small, that is a show that's definitely like just so extremely English and mm-hmm. British, you know, it's, mm-hmm. And I really had not watched I'd watched maybe a couple of episodes of the original series when it originally aired here. That's not really a show that is created for us either.
Nope.
And yet, it does such a fantastic job of like taking aspects that are so specifically British and figuring out a way to make them appeal to people outside of the teeny little bubble that is the Yorkshire Dales in the late 1930s and 1940s. How would this show, as it is, not as we would love it to have been, but as it exists currently, what do you think that Masterpiece could have done to market it more successfully and accurately, I guess?
They should have treated it like Mr. Bates, the way they're treating Mr. Bates.
Okay, say a little more about that, because I know that Mr. Bates exists and I'm definitely looking forward to it, but I actually haven't paid much attention to the marketing for it yet.
Okay, I see Lacey thinking, so I want to know, do you want to go first before I talk?
I'll go first. I think it is a little bit because like the promos give you a little more context for the story that Mr. Bates is going to tell. And I think it's a difference in the shows in that I think, you know, Mr. Bates does by necessity like explain its premise a little bit more straightforwardly than like Nolly can. But maybe they should have done some ads that were like, mm-hmm. you know, who was Noel Gordon? Or, you know, anything that kind of gave some context to, because I think you are right. I think they make it look like the show is going to be like about this fabulous, like, you know, I'm trying to think of like who would be, you know, like an American, like if Cher, like Cher, you know, I always think about Cher for everything. Like they think they make,
that's a good comparison for sure.
They make it look like it's going to be like, you know, a show that's about how fabulous and exciting and just, you know, boundary pushing this lady is, and it's not that at all. And then it kind of comes off feeling like a book report that you didn't read the book for. And it just feels like the kind of setup for this show relied on Helena Bonham Carter
mm-hmm.
without telling people anything about the character she was playing.
Yeah.
I would agree with that. I was actually thinking when I said they need to market it more like Mr. Bates. Mr. Bates is coming complete with a documentary about the real Mr. Bates.
Oh, yeah, like explainers and stuff.
Oh, that's smart. Yeah. Yes.
There is no documentary actually telling you about Nolly that is accompanying this. There is no... The press releases we get for Mr. Bates actually explain what happened with the post office and the history behind it and the company that screwed up the technology and how the post office didn't listen and how these people were charged and how now, only now, because of this television show, the Prime Minister is now launching an investigation and how this show has actually caused real change and why this TV show is important.
Right.
All this does is give you a little blurb about Nolly, so cool. Helena Bonham Carter, so cool. Seventies fashion, so cool.
Right,
that doesn't give me anything. And honestly, like I Lacey said this the other day in a meeting about how Helena Bonham Carter just plays like the same character over and over, which is Helena Bonham Carter.
Oh, I was gonna bring that up in a little bit. It's the Jack Nicholson move, like. She's literally everybody knows who Helena Bonham Carter is, and everybody knows what you're going to get when Helena Bonham Carter is in something. Like, it's been that way for years. I think she's essentially just playing a version of herself in everything that she does, like Jack Nicholson does. And I find it personally very hard to see past that in anything she does, I have a lot of complicated feelings about Helena Bonham Carter that go beyond this particular role. But like, I can't see past her playing herself in everything, which means this is just like a weird show about Helena Bonham Carter. Like, I don't see any difference between her and Nolly, but not in a good way, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And actually, like, one of the things when I started to talk about how I love Con O'Neill in this role as Jack Barton, you know, I love a lot of the actors in this. I love Mark Gatiss as her bestie. I love just about everybody in this except her. And that's actually probably the most frustrating part of this is my least favorite performance in Nolly is right. Helena Bonham Carter.
Yeah, that is definitely a little bit of an albatross there for the show. Mm-hmm. I think it's funny, like
And so when you've got a show that is about a thing that is actually really good and you're marketing it on the actress who plays it and the actress who plays it is actually the weakest part of the show, you have marketed it wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a shame. I think that a lot of the things, the notes that I would have appreciated them hitting harder are specifically related to, I did not know, for example, the thing that really I just cannot stop thinking about is that she left England to go to the US, lived in New York, attended university, came back and was an expert TV producer. They manage to sort of gesture towards that in the, again, like my favorite scenes of the episode are like the behind the scenes making of the TV show. And she's so knowledgeable and she's terrific at explaining these things. Like, we do this way, you know, it's not live, but we record it as live. It's very important that we hit all our marks and get all our lines correct because it is too expensive to reshoot. You know, she explains how things are, what they are, the vocabulary that we use to talk about them, why they are the way they are. And then they show us it happening. And actually, one of my other favorite thing about the show is the way that they use the footage that is meant to look like the footage of the show as it aired. Just as a little reminder to us, you know, everybody who grew up, perhaps, well, like, I certainly grew up watching soap operas, like sneaking them whenever I could, right?
Oh, my grandma was a Young and the Restless lady till the day she died.
Yes. 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 So
that weird look that they all had.
Yes. Oh my gosh. This like weird sort of hanging facial expression. You're just sort of like suspended in midair. It's very strange.
It's because you're like, you have to hold it because that's going into commercial.
Right, exactly, exactly. But like, the pacing is so slow, it's very repetitious. It's easy to forget about the pace of soap operas.
Oh yeah, like we have a big TV up in our lobby now that we've been renovating the building.
Uh-huh.
And one day, for some reason, I don't know what happened. Usually it just, you know, shows WETA programming. But one day The Bold and the Beautiful was on it.
Right.
And I was like, oh my gosh, that's yes. still Ridge and Taylor. Like, they are still having the same, like, fight.
Yep. Same yep. conflicts, same problems, doesn't matter, you know, week in, week out. But they use that aesthetic. Like, they've taken the footage and made it grainier. They've changed the aspect ratio. And all of the actors who we have seen mere seconds ago acting the way that we typically expect actors to act on TV and in film now, in this sort of like more naturalistic way, they all shift, like they on a dime, they spin to perform in this way that I think of now with fondness and nostalgia, but which my contemporary eye sees as so slow and weirdly affected.
Yep.
but you can't, I think you also can't understand the significance of the show without seeing that. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think you have to see it. So it pains me that the show does such a good job of those particular things. And the aesthetics, like, I love when we go to Nolly's apartment and it's beautiful. She turns on all the little lamps. It's very soft lighting. Like, who could fail to feel glamorous and cozy there? And not for nothing, it is so close to the aesthetic that my father's late mother had like different palette, slightly different color palette because she lived in Texas, but the sort of like the, there's a plushness to everything and like the very careful placement of her expensive, slightly fussy knickknacks, like all of that. I was just like, wow, that is wow. The two of them would have had an amazing conversation. Yeah. No, anyway, I love those elements of the show. I feel like there's a bunch of missed opportunities there. And I think that both of you have sort of hit that, those nails like right on the head as to, you know, if you could go in and be like TV doctors, I think it could have been so much better.
I am available for consultation, television executives.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that that's a really good thing for you to do.
Yeah, I honestly do think that I understand why Masterpiece marketed the way they did, but I do think that it's a massive missed opportunity. And yeah. I do think that there is enough of an LGBTQ audience in the world of PBS and in the world of Masterpiece that this very much could have been marketed as an LGBTQ history piece, an LGBTQ history drama. And it would have been absolutely fine.
I think it would be really cool, actually, if we at Televisions did, I don't know, some type of coverage in June about like shows that you didn't realize and films that you didn't realize were about LGBTQ history. You may have done that in years previous, but that might be something. And if you did, that might be something worth like updating. I just think that that's a, I don't know, surface journalism.
Oh yeah. Oh.
Are you gonna assign that to me right now?
Yeah, I need to make a card as soon as we are done with this episode.
Sorry/you're welcome? Question mark.
I know that we have done LGBTQ listicles before, but I definitely need to make sure that I.
I like that framing.
Yes, that's a really great framing.
You may have missed. You mean or
no? Things you may not have realized were.
Oh yes, we're super gay. Yeah.
Yes. Because seriously, this is. On a lot of levels, super gay, and I don't think that there's a lot of people who realize it. And that first episode doesn't make you realize it either.
No, not at all. Because her gay bestie just sort of comes out of nowhere, and like then
yes,
they have like a fun little night out window shopping,
which and is then really cute.
It's very cute, but it feels tonally dissonant to the rest of the show. It's very strange. And yes. I just love Russell so much. I forgot that like this was a Russell T. Davies joint, and because it doesn't feel like one at all, which is really disappointing because I know I keep bringing up It's a Sin, but like everyone, if you haven't watched It's a Sin, like go watch It's a Sin. Mm. And that just gets so much of the stuff that this show gets wrong. Right. Granted, that's a little bit more like openly queer, very straightforward about the story it's telling and what kind of show it's trying to be. But, like, I don't get that sense of self-awareness from Nolly at all.
Yeah. Mm. I also think a generous reading that occurs to me is that, you know, this is a show set in the 80s primarily. Mm-hmm. And as we've said before, sort of like at the dawn of the AIDS epidemic, you know, like, it was... The way that people used to whisper about diagnoses of cancer or AIDS, you know, I think that people also used to whisper about he's gay. I feel like there were a lot of like iconic mid and I guess to late in the 20th century queer art was sort of there for people with eyes to see.
Yes.
And I wonder if maybe that is part of what Russell is trying to like imbue this series with. Again, if that's sort of like a very attenuated thought that I'm having a week after I watched the screeners, perhaps that is not a successful thing that he did. But I feel like there's a that too would be a really interesting thing to unpack. And I don't know. I can't decide whether I wish he had more time, like more episodes, or had paired things way, way back.
That's why I'm like, I feel like wouldn't this have made a better TV movie, maybe?
Yeah, I think I'm coming around to that actually as the correct answer is I think this would have probably, he probably would have done better had this been a two-parter or a TV movie, I think.
Or like a documentary even?
I don't know.
I feel like there's a bunch of different ways that they could have chosen to approach it. I'm glad it exists because I would never have known anything about her.
Yes, absolutely.
And I love to know about things.
I just hope that what this does is that this actually inspires somebody to make something else that actually teaches me more about her life. I mean, seriously, move to New York in her mid-20s to go back to school.
Right. Amazing.
All I gotta say, in the 1950s when that was not done.
Yeah. Yes. Seriously. That would be fantastic.
I need more.
Yes. Yeah. It's how I feel when I watch Call of Midwife, which I still love to this day. But every time Sister Monica Jones says anything about her life as a younger person, I'm like, please give us the Sister Monica Jones prequel series. I need it. Like, I want to see her.
Careful. Don't say that where Heidi Thomas can hear you.
Very much want it. Heidi Thomas, if you're listening.
Next time we get a Q&A with Heidi Thomas, I'll send you so you can ask her. How's that?
Please do. I feel like we've probably said all that we can.
Considering we've moved on to Call the Midwife, it is probably time to stop.
Yeah, probably. It's the international signal for let's finish this one.
Or this was mid and we're done.
Well, folks. Yeah. Folks, I will be recapping this show. So, you know, maybe I'll have more wild thoughts that you can read on Monday.
Maybe I'll just read your recaps instead of finishing the show.
There you go.
Thank you for joining us for this wide-ranging discussion. We love having you.
Yes. Yes. You know, Thank you. I love that you love having me. This is always a real treat for me. I know I say that every time, but it's true every time.
I mean, flattery will get you everywhere. Tell the people where they can find more of your thoughts online.
Sure. Most recently, you can find my longer form thoughts on the Apple TV Plus historical miniseries Manhunt. I reviewed it for Primetimer.
I loved Manhunt, by the way.
Yeah. Yes, that was. Maybe we should talk about that sometime soon. Not to give you more work again.
It's secretly a bromance show, which I was not expecting.
Oh my God. I have so many thoughts.
We can't do a podcast on everything.
I know. Anyway, sorry, I interrupted. Continue. Your thoughts.
No. It's quite all right. And actually, by the time people hear this, I think that another piece I did about Manhunt will be out at Grammy.com, which will be an interview with the singer and songwriter Danielle Ponder, who wrote the incredible theme song for Manhunt.
Oh my gosh, I'm obsessed with that theme song. Like, I can now like sing it. It's so great. Sorry, derailing again, but it's so good.
It's one of those ones that
I do not hit the skip button.
No, never. Would never. That would be a crime against music. Possibly a hate crime. Yes. Anyway, she's a fascinating person and a terrific artist. And all her work is on Spotify. And I imagine Apple Music as well, given the provenance of that show. But if people are so inclined, just Google Sophie Brookover. I'm pretty sure the only one. And you can find me at Vulture and the Daily Beast and other fun spots. And of course, Televisions, the website.
Ooh. Anna, you're up.
I am the associate editor here at Televisions. And I also freelance around the web. You can find me at Primetimer. You can find me at NBC, MSNBC-ish. I'm basically Annie Bundle everywhere. And I'm pretty sure I'm the only one to.
Pretty sure.
Pretty sure. Anyway, that's basically me. Thanks. Bye.
Okay. I am Lacey MB everywhere that lets you pick your own profile name. So come be my friend. Hear my rantings about probably not Nolly, because I'm actually not mad about it enough to write about it, which is how you know it was mid. I do write a lot here at Televisions and around the entertainment web. But I always share my byline somewhere, so come and be my friend if you just want the site and the pod. We are on Facebook at Televisions Blog, all one word, or you can just visit us at televisions.org, where we have news updates, reviews, listicles, recaps, mad rantings from me when I get angry about something. Not going to be letting that Miss Scarlet business go for some time. It's fine. I'm fine. I'm doing okay. If you like what we do, you can click on the donate button up top and help us keep making all of this content for your eyes and ears, and also possibly in the process get access to PBS Passport, which will let you watch all of Nolly and the other spring PBS programs early, since they are all exclusive binge ops, I believe. Maybe Nolly's better if you watch all three back to back. I don't know. I will never know. It's fine. That is our show. Thank you for joining us. I'm sorry that we harshed all of your buzzes about this, if it was a show you were excited for, but we are here to tell the people the truth and speak for the proverbial trees. So there you go. Welcome to spring. It has been gorgeous here in the DC area for the past few days. It's our like 2 week window where it isn't a swampish hell pit. So get outside if you're local, enjoy this gorgeous weather. Maybe get some allergy meds because it's a little rough out there. Get your COVID booster if you're overdue for one, and do what you can to take care of each other, because I don't know, 'tis that time of year, which is always the time of year. Anyway, thanks for listening, and we will see you next week.